We exposed murders, child molestation, like by cops. They put a big target on my back as far as being a whistleblower. And I mean, they tried to get me for absolutely everything they could. It was just shocking. He said that he worked for the DNC, and that the DNC was shafting Bernie Sanders, and that he wanted to set up a site to expose what's happening. Oh. No, it wasn't just Seth Fitch. There was a whole group. Yeah, there was a whole group of people. Four or five. I set up four or five logins for the server. One day, somebody slipped. They didn't use a proxy, and the IP address came back from Fort Meade, Maryland. It's an IP address that belongs to the U.S. Cyber Command. Through my past experience working with whistleblower websites, I actually knew a guy in London who had ties to WikiLeaks. I connected those individuals together. And interestingly enough, the last I heard from any of them was the very beginning of the month where he got killed. It was like June or July.
Did you know Candida yeast overgrowth causes chronic fatigue, digestive issues, lack of focus, poor memory, skin issues, anxiety, depression, and much, much more? There's a free Candida Summit, which is airing July 9th through July 15th, and you will learn all of this, plus how to eliminate it. The link is below to sign up, so why not sign up? It's 100% free, and you will become much healthier by learning this valuable information.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. I have a really important interview for you today. This is with John Mark Dugan, who is in Moscow while we're recording, and he is there on asylum. He has important information on the Seth Rich case and things that you haven't heard before in the media. And I think it's a breakthrough on this case. It's probably the biggest breakthrough we've had in months on this case. And one thing that you'll realize is that the Mueller investigation are not interviewing him or other people that have really important information like him. And I think it points to the fact that maybe they're not that serious about getting to the bottom of what really occurred. But that being said, he comes on and he gives us a full-blown history of himself. He had whistleblower sites he was running, and also how he got related to Seth Rich and that important event in our history. And then he sticks around for my patrons and talks a little bit more about, he has a book out about his life and his whistleblowing and things that are really interesting. And he sticks around and gives us a glimpse of what's in his book for my patrons. And so if you're a patron, you can go there at patreon.com, Sarah Westall, and you can sign up and you can see that there. And I want to thank all my patrons for supporting the program. It is, I'm so thankful that you're here. And before we get into that interview, I want to share with you a program that you can sign up for with the Chef Camille. She teaches people how to do the paleo diet, which with all the information that we have on what to eat and what not to eat and all these things are so confusing, and then actually creating meals that work for you under these confusing diets. The paleo diet gets you back to naturally what was meant for our bodies, and you'll be much healthier taking her classes and learning about how to cook. She makes it easier, quick recipes, and you'll also save like 30 to 40% on your food costs by following her diet. So the cost of her classes are really inexpensive for what you'll save if you follow her advice. And she's been on the Food Network and on television. She had a series and things, and you'll have access to all sorts of stuff. And I have the link below. And people who sign up say they get way more value than what they've paid. So if you're interested in learning how to cook in a better way and get taught in an easy forum, I suggest that you look into that information that I have below. Now let's get into my interview with John Mark Dugan out of Russia. Hi, John. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
I'm so glad that you were willing to talk to me. There's a lot of you found yourself in a really interesting circumstance, and I want to really dive into that. But before we get into that, will you talk about your background so that we get a better idea of what ended up leading up to this?
Yeah, sure. So I was born in Delaware. I spent half of my life living in Colorado, North Carolina. And when I was probably 15 years old, we moved to Florida. I eventually became a Marine. I was in the United States Marine Corps, where I served in a weapons company. And I was the training NCO for the weapons company. I got out of the war and I had a couple of businesses. I was really bored.
You were a police officer, right?
So my friend said, "Hey, come be a cop." And I said, "Okay, I've always kind of had a protective instinct to me. I have Tourette syndrome, and I was kind of an outcast, in high school, and I hung out with a bunch of outcasts in high school, and I always used to protect them when some of the stronger guys came around and bullying them. So
yeah, high school has a way of being cruel, doesn't it? So Tourette's is why you blink a lot.
Yeah. I thought that being a cop kind of the natural progression for me. I would venture to say I'm a pretty smart kid. I was a smart kid. I started programming computers when I was 8 years old. And and that was the only, I was about becoming a cop because, generally speaking, the brighter you are, the less involved with civil service you should be. Not saying that there aren't very intelligent police officers, there are. I've never been one to bow to authority, I guess you would say. I was a cop for 6 years, and I got put out in the unit stationed out to a minority community. There was a group of guys running around. They were really beating the minorities really bad. I mean, they just walk up with their batons and start hitting them or just start.
Absolutely no respect whatsoever.
Yeah, no respect for the citizens at all. And, they would take these photos after they'd beat these people bloody and they'd post them on their Facebook pages.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, saying things like, "Oh, this guy fell down the stairs," and "I was gonna beat him more. This kid came," or just stuff to that nature. And I took those postings. I was really disgusted. Tried to send them anonymously up the chain of command, to internal affairs. And this is when I didn't really know a lot about being anonymous on the internet. Well, they tracked it back to my my dad's business account, and then therefore me. And they put a big target on my back as far as being a whistleblower. So I left the sheriff's office to work for another smaller department, and of course the sheriff's office leadership called up there and let them know that I was, a whistleblower and not to be trusted. And I wound up I wound up being terminated out of that department. And, you know, so I, at that point I was like, you know, I didn't need to be a cop. You know, I had plenty other skill sets. So I opened a couple of businesses and I started a bunch of whistleblower websites because, you know, I didn't want other police officers to face the same scrutiny or face the same retaliation as I did, for exposing wrongdoing in their departments. I mean, you know, I didn't even expose it to the media. I just exposed it internally initially. And when they failed to do anything about it, you know, then I sent it to the media. But, you know, the police leadership, they have a habit of, you know, if you're not a part of that, if you're not behind that thin blue line, then you don't belong. And it's really a bad, it's a bad view to have. So
CBD and THC are sort of like Bette Davis and Joan Crawford. They fight each other, but they really do their best work when they're together.
If you don't have cannabis in your medicine cabinet, you're missing out, ladies.
Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, George Washington, they all consumed cannabis.
Cannabis as a biofuel, cannabis as a fiber, cannabis as a medicine, cannabis as a food. The power of this plant is amazing.
Well, and then, so after that experience, you saw other corruption as well, right? Not just beating up minorities, which is awful in itself. That's, I'm not saying that's not corruption because that's terrible. You saw other types of corruption as well. Am I right?
Oh, there was, I mean, there's all sorts of stuff that would happen. You know, cops lying just to incarcerate people. And that actually happens a lot. They don't, one of the problems in police work is they don't write the report to the facts. They write the report to make the facts fit, because everybody's petrified of liability and getting sued. That, you know, if you said, well, I did this, and, you know, maybe it wasn't 100% the right move, you know, now you're opening your department up for liability. And that's a problem for them. So they make a lot of cops will make the facts fit the report instead of the other way around. And again, it leads to a situation where, okay, well, I'm lying on this report, I can lie for other stuff, and then you wind up with you know, whole groups of dishonest cops. And I'm not saying, I say a whole group, I'm saying maybe 10 or 20% are like really bad eggs, but you know, that's enough, you know?
It creates a culture, doesn't it?
It certainly does. It certainly does. And, you know, true to the Peter principle, I don't know if you've ever heard that term before, but, you know, the worst ones are the ones that usually get promoted and wind up in leadership positions. So Sheriff Bradshaw, I mean, this is a guy who used to run around with photos of black men with like parts of their bodies ripped off by the dogs, just bragging about what the dogs did. The detectives falsify reports to incarcerate minorities, like to get enough probable cause to get warrants for their arrest. And he was even caught stealing weapons out of the evidence room. You know, and of course, but a lot of people do with untraceable weapons departments, they carry them in their cars in case they get into a shooting. They can throw it down. So, and this is a guy who's running the Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office now. This is the same guy who's adamant that they do not want body cameras. And, you know, his excuse is, well, you know, we have to respect the officer's privacy, or, you know, it doesn't meet our budget. But really, I mean, our guys are doing such terrible things that you know, you don't want them to be caught. You don't want a scandal every other week.
Well, I can imagine. Okay, so this really motivated you to do your whistleblower websites.
Yeah, sure
and,
did.
And what kinds of things did you cover on your whistleblower sites?
Oh, my God. We exposed murders, child molestation, like by cops. We had my first site was PBSO Talk, and that kind of encompassed all of Palm Beach County. But I had lots of other people from other jurisdictions contact me and say, "Hey, I need an anonymous site for this reason. This is what's happening." So, like, there was a Renton, Washington. This cop was exposing criminal behavior by his department by making parody cartoons, and his department went to YouTube to try to get a warrant to get the IP address of whoever was posting it. They call it cyber stalking. And so he called me up, and I set up a website for Renton. I set up a website for California, where a bunch of people got indicted because of it. So I've had a lot of different whistleblower websites, and I've always been, you know, I've always kind of advertised on my site that, not really advertised, because I always did it for free. You know, if you have a problem in your department, you know, here's my contact information, call me, and I will set up an anonymous site for you so you can expose, you know, what you need to. And if the reasons were valid enough, if I felt that, you know, it was the reasons were justified justified spending my time, then I certainly would.
So were you pretty proficient at computers? You started when you were 8. Do you consider yourself, you're pretty good at keeping the sites anonymous. You know the black web pretty well, the dark web, how to use it, how to navigate.
Well, not so much the dark web. I know how servers work, and I know how to keep everything anonymous. I mean, I knew 8 or 12 programming languages by the time I was 20 years old. So
that's good. Yeah. I know. I have a computer science degree, and I never got up to 8 or 9 or 20. I'm sorry, I never got up to 20 languages. I always said I knew about 12 or 13, but that's good. You're better than I was.
You know, I only took one computer course in college, and I went in and I said, "Do I really have to sit here?" And the guy's like, "Well, if you feel that you can pass it, you can take the final exam now." And I did, and I passed it. He's like, "Wow, okay." He's like, "Well, you don't have to come to class, but if anybody else needs some tutoring, you know, you have to volunteer, and then you don't have to come."
Very good.
Yeah. That was the only computer class I ever took in college.
I know that. And I know that in my degree, the programming classes themselves were prerequisites. They didn't even count towards the degree. It was all more logic and the concepts and stuff. But we ended up, as a byproduct, you'd have to learn a language in a class. Okay, by then, you know, you have to learn Scheme or Lisp or something. Just as part of the class, it was, I can see how you can pick up things on your own, because we had to on a regular basis. Yes.
I actually attribute that to my Tourette's, because people with Tourette's, they have like an overpopulation of neurons in your brain. So that's kind of, they learn things easily.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you had something that really, you know, kept you going when you were young. And you seem to be doing amazing things for people. We need more whistleblowers. Obviously, whistleblowers are targeted. Now, during that time that you had these whistleblower sites, you got the eye of the FBI and authorities. Now, were they doing things to you? I know they were investigating you. Can you talk a little bit about that and why you think they were investigating you?
Well, they investigated me for 18 years, ever since I set my site up. You know, I had one of my contacts at the sheriff's office say, "Hey, they're investigating." So I had some of my journalist friends call them, and they said, "Well, we can't talk about it. It's an open investigation." And they did that for 8 years. And I mean, they tried to get me for absolutely everything they could. It was just shocking. What happened is in 2015, I became a witness in a murder trial against one of the cops. And the sheriff's office, they hired investigators to follow me and my family around, to harass my parents and my wife, and my kids. They chased my wife and two kids through her neighborhood, like on Easter Day of 2015. And, you know, the police wouldn't do anything about it. So I decided I need to do something about it. And what I did was I set up a PBX system overseas, and I routed my voice to the PBX system, and it was changed into the voice of a woman. And then it exited. It got bounced back into New York, where it exited the SIP trunk, where it exited into the normal telephone system, the POTS system is what they call it. And so I called this investigator. I knew he had a side business as a like a home renovator. I called him up, pretending I was a rich woman from New York, and that I needed a home renovated. And, you know, I probably talked to him for a total of 20 hours, and I gained his confidence. And he started flirting with, the woman he knew as Jessica. And he spilled all sorts of dirt on how he was hired by the sheriff's office specifically to investigate political dissidents and enemies of the sheriff, and how he would tear their lives and their families and their businesses apart until they found something to arrest them on. It was just, I mean, it was really, I mean, the stuff, the criminal activity they were admitting to. I knew that they were going to say, "Oh, well, you know, this was an investigation. We were just leading this guy on." So I created the scheme. I convinced this guy to buy $120,000 worth of stock in a company called GHL by giving him phony stock tips. And he did. He used his Wells Fargo account, brokerage account, and he bought like $119,850 in stock.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah. So, you know,
what happened with all that information? What did you do?
The audio recordings are all on my website.
Was that for protection then? You used it as a leverage to get them to leave you alone?
No. Because that, you know, honestly, it's a felony. Recording somebody in the state of Florida is a felony. And that's a law that's set up by the police, basically, and set up by the crooked politicians, because they don't want their dirt exposed.
Florida's one of the most dirty places. Wow. Keep going.
Yeah. So, but regardless, I mean, they couldn't prove it with me. They can now, obviously, but they couldn't prove it with me. I posted everything on my website.
Oh, you acted like it was a whistleblower, and then you posted it. Excellent. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Now, that you were being investigated, but now what happened? How did you run into the Seth Rich, and why did he contact you?
Okay, so I had just when I was using an app called Wicker. I don't know if you know what Wicker is.
Not really. You want to explain it just quickly?
It's like pure messaging. And you know, I had a lot of people. At this point, I probably had 10 people every month contacting me, asking me for whistleblower websites. And occasionally I would do them. You know, I didn't have a lot of time. But I got a call. I got a message from a guy who claimed to be. And by the way, I don't say Seth Rich. And the reason I don't say Seth Rich is because I don't ask names. And, you know, I never ask this person his name. But we'll get to that in a second.
Sure.
I was contacted by an individual on Wicker. And he said that he worked for the DNC, and that the DNC was shafting Bernie Sanders, and that he wanted to set up a site to expose what was happening. Well, I mean, I think he contacted me like mid-February, and I kind of figured he was some kind of crackpot, you know. Not that he didn't, he sounded very passionate, and he sounded authentic. You know, a lot of times when something's too good to be true, it's
just, you don't believe it at first. Yes.
Yeah. So he asked me to set up a site, and I said, okay, well, you know, I can't this week. I'm running around. I got a lot of stuff to do, but you know, get back to me next week. And he did. And I said, all right, well, you know, hit me back in one more week. And finally, I mean, he was very persistent. And I said, okay, send me like an example, like a short example of something that you have. And he did. He sent me a PDF file, which was a printout of an email from somebody in the DNC. And I mean, I don't have that anymore because my computer was taken. But we'll get to that also.
Sure. What was in this email?
I don't remember. It was an internal communication between some DNC party members.
Did it have relevance? I mean, was there exposed significant information on that one that he sent you?
Yeah. It was something about Bernie Sanders. And I don't remember what it was off the top of my head.
But it was one of the things indicating that they were trying to undermine his campaign.
It was, yeah.
Okay.
It definitely was. And I said to myself, okay, well, this is pretty interesting, you know. And at this point, I didn't know the authenticity of the email. It looked authentic. I said, okay, well, and I'm sitting to myself thinking, okay, well, one you can forge, but, you know, a lot is a lot harder. So I said to him, well, just send me what you have through it, and, you know, I'll do something. And he set up a used a tour, and you can actually do something called Onion Share. So I downloaded a bunch of files. I downloaded a zip folder on the tour Onion Share, and it contained like 750 emails, and you know I didn't really have a chance to look through them all. You know, I looked through a couple. I was like, damn. I was like, okay, this is definitely something. And I went to sleep. And the next morning at 7 a.m, the FBI raids. They had like 40-something agents. 40. I mean, they swarmed my whole entire house.
And what was the date? Was that March 14th? The March 14th raid?
I think it was, yeah.
Okay. So, it was obvious it was because of those emails that you downloaded that they raided, or could it be for something else?
It could be for something else. About a month before, you know, I had gone to them, the Mark Lewis conversation, because that's the detective who... I was speaking with his Jessica, who admitted to doing all this criminal stuff. And he admitted into illegally accessing all my social media accounts and my email and stuff. So I went to the FBI, and basically the FBI gave me the finger and said, we're not doing anything about it. Because, well, he's a cop. And so I said, well, okay. And my philosophy was, if my information isn't... private, nobody's information was private. And I wrote I downloaded, hundreds of millions of rows of database data, and I wrote queries to extrapolate who was protected sources in the state of Florida. So I exposed like the names, addresses, and phone numbers of cops, CIA agents, FBI agents,
that are okay. So
yeah, so
the raid could have been that.
It could have been.
But who knows? And how significant was that? I mean, that's a pretty significant exposure in itself.
Yeah, but you know what? It all came from public record.
Oh, it did.
Huge. Yeah, huge flaw in the system.
So
huge
flaw. It was all public record. So technically, you didn't do anything illegal.
I don't know. I guess it's how they did frame the narrative. You know, they could say, "Well, yeah, maybe it's public record, but he's willfully exposing these people and that's espionage." I don't know.
So, what were some of the most important things that you exposed in that data dump?
Oh, well, I mean, FBI agents in South Africa, probably CIA agents. I burned safe houses, because I also did the same with the property. So I burned safe houses. Yeah.
So could people have been killed because of what you exposed? Being honest.
But here's the thing. It was public record. If somebody wanted the information, they could have done it anyways.
Why were the safe houses public?
Well, so it's how do I explain it? Do you know what CITUS data is?
No.
Do you know what GIS is?
So
when you look at, when you go to your property appraiser's website, you'll see all the map of all the houses and stuff like that. That's all GIS data. And what they did in Florida is they would publish the two sets of data. They would publish the data that would show the property appraiser's website. So it would have a parcel number, and then an asterisk for the name and an asterisk for the actual address, if it was a confidential record. But then they had the CITUS data, which was for, GIS mapping. And in the CITUS data, it had the parcel number, it had all the rest of the data. And you couldn't, you really have to know what you're doing in order to do anything with it. So, could anybody have been killed? I don't know. Maybe, but that really wasn't my point. It wasn't my concern. It's terrible to say. We have these group of law enforcement officers just willfully hacking into the citizens' social media and email accounts to find any reason they can to arrest them on a crime. And the federal government's not think about it. Why do they deserve privacy? Their privacy is no more valuable than any other person's privacy in my mind.
So let's get back into the Seth Rich situation. They raided your house, took all your stuff. At that point, did they take the Seth Rich files and you no longer had them?
Yeah. They took everything computer related.
Okay. So
I say everything. I mean, they took, the memory that you put in the motherboards, they took that too.
Did they take anything else? Or is it just you raided your computers? Did they take also your...
No, took all my files that I have on the criminal activity committed by cops. And it was clearly outside of the scope of their warrant. But they took it anyways. I mean, yeah, there were... they took all sorts of stuff.
Were you in fear of your life at that point?